You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. There's nothing like a special event to bring out the worst of the scammers. Whether it be credit card details, bank details, or identity theft, there's plenty of it about at the moment, mostly thanks to the Olympic Games. More so than at any other time in internet history, spam is up, identity theft is the opening story of mainstream media, and crooks and shonks are lurking behind the most benign emails. According to the latest quarterly Secure Computer Internet Threats Report, around 150 spam messages are sent out every day, up 280% from the same time last year. Volumes peaked on the 27th of March this year, with 185 billion spam messages being sent in just one day. In an attempt to appeal to a wider audience, spammers are now moving into languages. Previously, almost all spam messages were in English, but now half of all the spam messages are in other languages, with Japanese and German being popular alternatives. Malware is the scourge of the internet. Normally delivered via email or installed by just visiting unscrupulous websites, malware authors try to trick you into installing their insidious programs on your computer, so that they can collect information about you, your identity, such as your bank details and passwords. They may even want to turn your computer into a zombie so that they can send their wares via your computer. Malware purveyors have embraced the Olympic Games wholeheartedly. Recent outbreaks and attacks are attempting to lure victims with the promise of news and information on the Beijing Games, and researchers only see the trend increasing over the coming weeks. One of the most recent attacks is specifically targeting national sporting organisations and athletic representative groups. The attacks are disguised as a dispatch from the IOC and contain a Trojan hidden as a PDF press release. According to security firm Message Labs, the content of the attack may have been lifted directly from an official IOC document. When the malicious attachment is launched, the user is infected with the Trojan that logs and updates sensitive data. The use of supposedly official documents has been a favourite technique for targeted spear phishing attacks. Similar attacks have been attempted to spoof the US Internal Revenue Service and Department of Justice. Researchers are predicting that the trend will only get worse, so be prepared. Don't click those links in emails even if you know who they're from. Cut and paste them into your browser only if you trust the source. Spend $60 and buy yourself a damn good internet security product that tells you what it's doing. And tell others who share your computer to be on their guard. Follow these simple steps and your details will remain just that, your personal details, and surfing will continue to be an enjoyable experience for you and the entire family.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Google takes to the road. Spam, spam and more spam, with a bit of malware thrown in for good measure. A Microsoft-free desktop in a worldwide market is on the table. Jobs makes a boo-boo. And Mozilla looks at consolidating messages into one application. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Google comes down to earth in Australia, People Telecom to be the first to resell Telstra's ADSL2 broadband, Live Mesh Tech Preview opens up to Aussies, the federal government announces the deadline for the national broadband network tenders, and be sure to think before you click during the 2008 Beijing Olympics. This is Tech Talk News. In the United States this week, 11 people from 5 different countries have been charged with the biggest identity theft and computer hacking case in American history. The cyber criminals allegedly hacked into wireless computer networks of 9 American retailers, stealing more than 40 million credit card and debit card numbers. US prosecutors allege that the numbers were then sold over the internet to other criminals. The retail hacking ring was first revealed in March last year. The alleged ringleader is a US citizen, Albert Gonzalez. Michael Sullivan is a US attorney for the District of Massachusetts, and he says that the hackers used a technique called war driving.
War driving is simply driving around in a car with a laptop computer looking for accessible wireless computer networks. According to the indictment, Gonzalez and his co-conspirators did just this, and once they located a wireless network, they hacked into it.
And once inside the computer network, the cyber criminals installed what are called sniffer programs.
Sniffers are programs that capture communications over computer networks as the program moved through the retailer's credit and debit processing networks. This allowed the defendants to remotely capture sensitive information, such as the card numbers, passwords, and account information.
The alleged ringleader, Albert Gonzalez, is in custody in New York and faces life in jail if he's convicted of all the charges. Google has launched its controversial Street View mapping tool in Australia amid a backlash against the feature by privacy activists around the world. Street View, accessed from the Google website, lets people explore the country at ground level for the first time with little more than a computer and an internet connection. Google-branded Holden Astra cars with roof-mounted cameras began traversing our streets about November last year, taking tens of millions of detailed panoramic street-level photos. Most Australian coastal cities and many regional and outback towns are covered, but there are some notable omissions, such as Uluru. Google Maps product manager Andrew Foster said more images would be added to Street View in the coming months as they are processed by the search engine juggernaut. Street View was launched in the US in May last year and has since expanded to parts of France and Italy. Google's camera-equipped cars have also been spotted in New Zealand, Britain, Germany, Spain, Ireland, the Czech Republic, Japan, Switzerland, and Norway. Mid-tier telco People Telecom today said it would soon start selling ADSL2 Plus broadband services based on Telstra's wholesale platform, making it the first telco to do so. Telstra has, for the past several years, demonstrated an unwillingness to wholesale ADSL2 Plus services to other telcos as it does ADSL1, as rivals like iiNet and Optus are speedily rolling out their own ADSL2 Plus networks. However, the nation's former monopolist has appeared to change its tune over the past several months. Telstra has the largest ADSL2 Plus network in Australia, touching some 900 telephone exchanges. People Telecom is already an extensive reseller of Telstra services and inked a $200 million deal earlier this year with the bigger telco. Microsoft has opened up its much-anticipated live mesh technology preview for Australians for the first time. The technology, when completed, will provide a way for people to synchronize information across a mesh of devices, including desktop and notebook PCs, Mac and smartphones. Details of Mac and mobile phone synchronization capabilities are yet to be announced. Harvey Sanchez is Microsoft's online services leader here in Australia and spoke to Tech Talk Radio recently.
Microsoft Live Mesh is basically a new service that Microsoft just announced. But basically what Live Mesh does, if you think about your digital world today and you think about the type of devices that you might have and the type of data that you might have in different types of devices, it basically allows you to really unify all of those devices together into your own personal mesh. So, for example, if you have, you know, a PC at home and a PC in the office and a media device or a music device, or you might have a mobile phone, and you've got data spread across all of those devices. Well, with the power of the internet, you have the ability to integrate those all together. So, for example, if I wanted to share documents that's sitting on one machine, I'll be able to get access to that, to those documents from whatever device I might have inside my mesh.
Aussies with a Windows Live ID can now use their login to participate in the technology preview, which was previously only open to US residents. The deadline has now been set for the National Broadband Network tender process. Telcos in the running for the $4.7 billion National Broadband Network have two more weeks to finalise and hand over the network information needed for the tender process. Acting Communications Minister Anthony Albanese released the final draft documents a few days ago, setting the deadline for the end of the working day on the 22nd of August. Once the government receives and verifies all of the required information, bidders will have 12 weeks to finalise and submit their proposals. Telstra claims it's ahead of the game, having submitted all of its information last Monday, though the government has yet to confirm if the submission is complete. Finally this week, the Beijing Olympic Games is now underway, and security experts have sent out an 11th-hour warning to internet users. Think twice before you click. Mark Hoffman from the US-based SANS Institute said in an advisory last week that it should be common knowledge by now that the next few weeks are going to be rife with attempts to phish, spam and scam users with the Olympic theme. In essence, he said that malicious campaigns will all ask recipients to click, so it's probably a good idea to remind users of the dangers of the almighty click. Furthermore, today, security vendor McAfee sent out advisory warning of the high-level sophistication spammers, phishers and malware writers use. The vendor warns users to take precautions when surfing the web for news, widgets or applications related to the Olympics. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
And here we are again. Olympic organisers have announced that everyone attending the opening ceremony
is going to be microchipped.
Basically, the system was first used for international bidding on coffee crops, would you believe?
Don't you need a SIM card in the phone?
Not so to take pictures, no.
No?
And you can SMS them to the emergency operators too.
Good. Oh, that's great.
That's probably a reasonable outcome.
In an Australian first, Telstra recently showed a hologram to beam its chief technology officer live into Adelaide from Melbourne to talk to a major function.
So if you've got a product like that,
I'm going to talk about your favourite company and their warranty. In just a minute. So what's to say that I'm not who I say I am and I get on board?
Bit of common sense, people, please.
Wonder what their mobile broadband offering's like.
Damn iTunes. Damn it to hell, I say.
When you switch on your GPS, you do not switch off your brain.
Well, that's even worse if it's gone back to Sydney and it's got that sort of downtime.
Let me tell you, high-definition television and Blu-ray, there's no comparison.
Yeah, look over here, look over here. Don't look at Vista, look over here.
Yeah, exactly, we've bypassed Vista completely. Yeah. We've gone to the next operating system.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Very good evening, everybody. Welcome wherever you are around the country. I'm Andrew McComb. This is Tech Talk Radio. Sitting across the panel from me this evening are two very willing and able gentlemen. Dr. Graham is in. Evening, Dr. Graham.
Good evening, Andrew.
How's life in the spam world? Have you been inundated with all the rubbish that's floating around at the moment with your customers?
Certainly a lot of it about. Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge to keep the spam filters up to date, but
it is.
We're doing our best
with all the stuff that's coming in. It's unbelievable.
It really is.
People that have, you know, things that you reckon you've subscribed to, but just, you know, you don't. Like some CNN report came in today. I've never subscribed to it.
That's the big one at the moment, it seems, is the fake news items that get emailed around the place.
Well, that's the hook, isn't it?
Yep.
They can bait you and you click it, you're gone.
And some quite incredible headlines that these spammers seem to dream up.
Yep. Good evening, Justin. JD's here.
Good evening.
How's life in the Mac world over there? You've got your Dell tonight.
I know.
What happened?
The work machine tonight.
Oh, my goodness. Something you're not telling us? Or is it?
No.
Our Mac guru over here, he's brought the Dell in. Anyway, so yes, welcome aboard. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address if you'd like to contribute to tonight's show. Also, come up on our chat forum, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Good evening to everyone who's logged in there as we speak. Now, the spam issue is becoming a real problem at the moment, especially for those who are, I guess, not so tech savvy. Computer viruses have managed to hit 1 million too. The number of viruses, worms and trojans in circulation has topped the 1 million mark. A new high for malicious programs was revealed by the security firm Symantec in the last edition of its biannual Internet Security Threat Report. And the vast majority of these programs have been created in the past 12 months. Does that surprise you, Graham? 12 months, they're all... Because it changes quickly, doesn't it?
It doesn't surprise me that these sort of statistics crop up in a Symantec scare you into buying our product report, no.
Oh, you're wearing that hat again tonight, are you?
The world's a very scary place.
It is.
Pay us money.
Yeah. That's right.
Hey, I bought the, I renegotiated and resubscribed to my Kaspersky subscription the other day too.
Oh, yes.
He's changed it from 2008, because, you know, we've had Eugene Kaspersky on the show here.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting Russian chap.
and he's changed his interfaces and GUIs a little bit, much to my liking, actually. It's probably one of the only open and honest device or programs that actually tells you what it's doing, not like some of the others that just sort of say, I've prevented this and you don't need to know.
Yeah, I must say, I've had a bit of a play with the trial versions of that that product and been impressed. It does find stuff that the other ones miss, that's for sure.
So does the GUI reflect Vista now? Is that the change? Or
no, I wouldn't say that. It's probably more user-friendly. It gives you more information on the screen as to what it's doing and how it's doing it, and it learns, obviously, what it used to do. It used to look at your emails and, you know, have a white list and a black list and all those things in between. And the more you use it, the more you get emails sent to you, the more thorough it becomes.
Right, so it just tells you what it's doing as it's doing it.
Yeah, it does. It'll put little pop-ups on the screen, which you can turn off if it annoys you, but you can say, oh, look, you've opened up Excel and it's trying to talk to the internet. Is this okay? And you go, yeah. And it then remembers all that. So it's a bit of a self-education.
Why is Excel trying to talk to the internet?
You do, and it's funny because you get some really bizarre things like that come along. You go, what's that application? Oh, bloody iTunes again, you know, looking for another update. Well, you can see Safari again.
Yeah, well, you can see why iTunes might be talking to the internet, because it works that way. But yeah, that's the thing to watch out for with programs like that, is to think about when you click on the accept button, whether that program really should be talking to the internet, because if it's not, that might be an indication that something's wrong.
And the other thing too, cyber criminals have been pumping out malware to fool antivirus programs, which look for their characteristics. So they're trying to trick the tricksters now.
Yeah, well, that race has been going on for a while too.
Oh. another one of the other big warnings out this week, Adobe. And we're not trying to put people off. We're just letting you know what's happening out there in the wide world of technology. Adobe, they make Flash, which is fairly ubiquitous program, which is on plenty of websites.
Yeah.
Now, Adobe's warning that its Flash video player is being used to push malware. The company said in a bulletin posting that malware writers have been using fake news video programs. Here we go again. That purport to offer video clips.
There you go.
So, once again, the Olympics, people will be putting video clips up and it'll be Flash players. I use Flash.
So, do you go to the Adobe website to make sure your Flash player's up to date? Is that the fix?
Don't know whether it's a Flash player thing or whether it's being embedded in videos and things like that, or they take you to sites. But Adobe said that the malware is being propagated through social networking sites in the way of spam comments advertising fake news stories.
And if you're using Google Street View, you need Flash 9. So every time you play with that, you're running Flash.
Okay, yep. And the Flash video they're talking about is the technology that makes YouTube work and all those other, you know, online video providers work.
It's a nice lean and mean way of getting, you know, video to your player. I must admit, with doing the cooking show that I do, all of our recipes get put up on the web server. So
I've noticed that.
Yes, good. Have you cooked any yet?
No, I haven't.
Hang on,
no.
Wrong show. Technology.
The banoffee pie is.
Must get him
That's
on the show.
Probably gone by now, is it?
No, I might still be there. We'll get him on the show. He's a lovely chef, lovely bloke. He can talk technology and cooking.
That'd
be interesting.
That would be
it?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes, Flash video. Where were we? yes, they're using Flash video, obviously, to, you know, hook people and viewers into going to those unscrupulous websites to pop up thing. The attack is the latest spin in the popular fake codec social engineering tactic. What's that? What's a fake codec? A codec that you have when you're not having a.
That's right. A codec is it's short for coder decoder, which is a little bit of software that either encodes or decodes something like video or audio or something along those lines. So you have a codec that knows how to play MP3 files, for example.
Yes.
You have a codec that knows how to play often, or there's various other ones as well.
Okay.
You have a codec that knows how to play MP4 files, for example. One of the tricks that the bad guys use is they send your video, which says it needs a particular codec, but the codec that your player then goes off and tries to get doesn't decode the video, but in fact does something evil to your machine and takes over. Install something on your machine that you don't want.
Become a zombie.
Yeah, which is not what you want.
But it's in a lot of respects, it's good now that the only way you can actually get a lot of these things on your computer is by clicking, which I think in itself means that you've only got yourself to blame in a lot of respects. If your virus or antivirus doesn't block it coming in via email, because all the spam these days have basically come to one line. You know, they'll use some stupid hook like Iran starts World War III, and they just put a link hyperlink in an email.
That's exactly right.
Don't click it, but that's what they're doing. And that's seeming to get through all the spam filters.
Yeah, and that's because it's easier to use social engineering. In other words, it's easier to convince a human to do something against their own interest than it is to defeat the technological barriers. But there are still ones about that use technological means as well. So it's important to keep your machines up to date, do your Windows updates, all that sort of stuff. But if you've done all that and you still click on the link, then you might still get infected. So you've got to be careful with that.
Absolutely, especially if they're one step ahead of the protecting people software.
That's right, yeah.
Now, speaking of computer-based protection, CAPTCHA. Which I think you came up with what that acronym stands for. Basically proves that you're human, not and all that sort of stuff. It's those funny little numbers you type in onto your submit a message. Here's some characters, type those in.
Or how many cats are there on the letters?
There's
some weird ones like
really?
That.
Really? I haven't seen that one. I must admit, I am struggling with some of the CAPTCHA characters these days. Have two or three goes at it. Is it because I'm getting old or what?
Completely automated public Turing test to tell computers and humans apart.
Oh, you're a wealth of information there, Dr. Graham.
I wonder how long it took them to make that up.
Yes. A Turing test being a well-known test for, you have a conversation and you try to determine whether it's with a person or with a computer.
Okay. Well, good. The reason why I'm talking about CAPTCHA is that poor old Google uses it to send emails, or if you're a Gmail user, well, that's been got. The spammers have finally got through that. So now we're starting to see spam arising from the Gmail
accounts. Yeah. There's been a couple of breaches of that particular CAPTCHA in the last couple of months. We reported on one a couple of months ago.
Also, the Olympics obviously being the real kick behind the generation of spam, because everyone likes to know what Olympics medals tallies are and things like that.
Yeah.
You hear all these funny stories that are coming out of it. That's really the hook that's got these guys going. But it's interesting to note that a spam has reached around about 150 billion messages a day. Imagine how fast the internet would go in this country if we didn't have that amount of spam going through it.
Yeah, it's a fair proportion of the traffic on the networks, that's for sure. It's definitely loading things up.
This is recently a survey found that in, I think, April or May, we got to that amazing amount, 150 billion spam messages on that one particular day. That's huge. That was on the 27th of March this year.
And you wonder why it takes 20 minutes to get an email out of Big Pond.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, actually. Because we run our own mail servers, and ours work really well because we don't have the volume or the traffic.
Well, I've noticed on Big Pond, because I'm a Big Pond user, it's actually their web interface that takes forever to clear email.
Oh, here we go. Really?
But using POP3 and IMAP is fine.
Yeah, they have their moments with their SMTP mail delivery, though. Sometimes a mail goes in and takes 20 minutes to come out again the other side of all the filtering.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed a difference between the web version and using an email client.
Yeah, the web, it probably goes through a different filtering process.
Mm. It took 20, 30 minutes easily from the web.
There's a valid discussion going on in the chat room at the moment.
Is there, Howard?
CAPTCHA is a nightmare when you are colorblind. And also CAPTCHA is a nightmare. I read that bit. CAPTCHA is a nightmare when you're colorblind. Yeah, I could imagine that.
Yeah.
Sorry, the screen scroll.
There's lots of issues for that with not just colorblindness, but other visual impairments. A lot of them have an audible CAPTCHA as well, where you can get it to play a sound that and you type in the words you hear as an alternative to the visual one. But it's a bit of a problem to make it secure and accessible. It's
one of our listeners,
a computer can't read it.
Well, yeah, that's the trick to it, isn't it? One of our listeners says he's had over 24,000 emails into his spam box over the last 30 days. Well, I'd be changing my email address if I were you. Because I think that's another thing you have to bear in mind these days too, that an email address is not permanent. You've got to change it every 12 months or 24 months or thereabouts.
It depends on the situation. But yes, once they get on the lists, they stay on the lists,
And I thought feedback at Tech Talk Radio was pretty savage with our spam, but boy, 24,000, that's a huge amount.
Mm.
All right. Now, moving right along, we had some correspondence in this week. For those of you listening to us, just a bit more about what's happening on the show tonight. Dr. Ron has been in the TARDIS. He's currently in Northern Ireland, and allegedly, I have spoken to him this evening, if mobile phone connections work for him in the northern part of Ireland, and I said, well, you've got half a chance, you're not in Australia, he will be calling in later on in this evening, which would be really good. Whilst we're in the UK, Brian sent us an email from Yorkshire in the UK just to confirm your query about the BBC on the last Tech Talk Radio podcast. Remember we were talking about television licenses and things like that, how we should have them here in Australia to fund production locally and the likes?
Yes.
Just to confirm your query, he said, yes, we still pay for license fees to the BBC. It's currently, sitting down, £139. £139.
That's pounds?
Yes, per year. So do the maths on that. What are we at the moment?
That's just shy of $300.
Absolutely. Now, if everyone paid $300 towards television in Australia, boy, we'd have Auntie be head and shoulders, wouldn't they?
There wouldn't be any competition left.
No, I think that's bring back pay TV. Literally.
Well, look at how good the ABC is currently doing things, particularly with online content.
Oh, iView's brilliant.
It is. Imagine the sort of production they could do if they had that sort of funding.
Oh yes, it would be very, very good. They've got 8 interactive TV channels, 10 radio networks, and more than 50 local TV and radio services. The BBC's website, bbc.co.uk, and the on-demand TV and radio services. BBC and iPlayer. Now, iPlayer is like what iView is here in Australia.
Yes.
It
may have been the same technology underneath.
Oh, it's not actually. It's completely different because I've actually been into iPlayer and I've downloaded the client. I came in through a proxy server to say, I'm in London. And I said, okay, here you go. So I got my little iPlayer from the BBC and I loaded it up. And no, it's nothing like what we've got here.
Oh, interesting.
I just think iView's better just quietly. Well done, ABC. So.
Well, the ABC have a history of doing these things well.
Yes, imagine if Telstra was still 100% government-owned. Where would we be today? The mind boggles, really. And it was about that point that the toner cartridge and the printer ran out. So I'm sorry, Brian, there is a bit more here, but it's a bit faded. Technology failed me in that instant. We did have another one here too, which I've currently misplaced at the moment, but nonetheless, it'll probably front itself very shortly. Oh, here we go. I knew I had it here. Simon, he sent us an email saying, interesting to note that there was a sharp increase in spam that coincided with the opening of the Olympic Games and has continued right through the weekend. The Gmail servers let many slip through for about 48 hours, but have since they've put their finger in the dike and captured it all. Mm. I think that's what they were saying on the chat room before too, that it's sort of slowed down a little bit.
Yep.
Let's talk about Google's Street View. Have you been there? Have you checked out your house?
I have.
Have you seen any strange people climbing in through your window?
Not climbing in through my window, no.
Any Telstra vans outside of well-known brothels in certain parts of Australia?
There's a few.
The Google van has.
Yes.
There's some very funny pictures on some certain, I think the Age website in particular had some very interesting photos and stuff like that there. But as we went to air last week, Justin was saying, no, it's not there yet.
I was having a nice look at the roof of the studio, but we couldn't see the front of the studio last week. And now we can.
As soon as we went off air, they turned it on. Mm. They must have been listening to us.
Yep.
But, Google Street View images are supposed to be taken in public roads, but they've done some fairly sneaky little turns. They've driven through one of the colleges just up the road from the studio.
They drove through Wesley, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Drove through Wesley and a few things. They've been up, once again, you go to the Age website, which is a newspaper here in Melbourne, and you can see some great photos of where they've driven up private road, no trespassing and things like that. They've also caught
some people doing some things that perhaps they shouldn't have been doing.
Oh, I haven't seen those photos. Really?
Yeah.
Just the people sleeping in cars on the job and stuff
like that. That sort of stuff. Yeah. Like getting changed behind his car at the beach.
Oh, I saw that one. Yeah, that was very funny. Even the Google man himself, I think he was cleaning the lens and it took a snap of him. I think I saw that picture as well.
And my favourite one is the Google van driving through the McDonald's drive-thru.
Oh, yes. So if you've got some good Google photos, send them to us because I'm sure there'll be plenty of them out there. They haven't done some parts of town, which I'd expected them they would because we're based here in Melbourne. There's one of the salubrious areas which this radio station we're going to air live on at the moment services, which is Boroondara. Half of Boroondara was not taken.
Ah, why is that?
Which is a fairly sizable slab of the affluent part of the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. There's also a few suburbs further south. Maybe he had a sickie that day. I don't know. Maybe he forgot to put the film in the camera or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Could be something like that.
But go and check yourself out and see if you can find your car parked out the front or more importantly, somebody else's car. And go and quiz your partner. Whose car's that? It happened during summer too. I've noticed predominantly around November, I think they did a lot of their stuff, November, December, January of this month. So
you figure that out from looking at clues in the pictures?
No, that's in the press release. Oh. But they did a bit of a swing around that in that particular point in time. So, and they're heading off to other countries too.
Oh, yeah.
As I alluded to in the opener.
Who gets it next?
The Kiwis. Watch out, Kiwis.
Oh.
I think there's some Kiwi stuff there already. But
lots of streets with sheep.
Yes.
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Hmm.
Other interesting stuff that's happened this week as well. Network 10 is now driving content online. Network 10 has embarked on a digital projection to make its on-air content available online. Oh, they're following in the footsteps of the ABC.
Yes.
The project is expected to reduce the time taken to convert on-air content to online from a few hours to as close as real-time as possible. Wonder if they're going to start streaming. Not that there's anything on Channel 10 worth watching. That's my opinion.
That might be a matter of opinion, but yeah, no, it's interesting. It's good that they're being driven to try and improve this area. I think the ABC is setting a very high standard, and yeah, I don't know whether driving is the right term or whether they're following, but yeah, whatever they're doing, yeah, as long as online services improve, they're going in the right direction, I think.
It's funny, like we run broadcast equipment where in the office where we are, and it's very easy to actually churn stuff. I can get stuff up online before it even goes to air. That's not bad, is it? So, and those people who watch our website quite often see it before it goes to air.
There you go.
Very sneaky of us. Well, that's what we do. Okay, so well,
how does the network feel about that?
Well, they haven't said anything. Not yet, anyway.
Fair enough. So, all right, moving on.
The other interesting bit of news this week, IBM and their friends promise a Microsoft-free desktop for a worldwide market. Now, I thought this was quite interesting.
Is OS 2 coming back?
OS 2, maybe. It's called Linux, actually. IBM, three major Linux distributors and their hardware partners are teaming up to deliver Microsoft-free desktop PCs to the 1 billion unit worldwide market. The cost could be as little as half of that of a Microsoft equivalent.
Mm.
The days, this, I'm looking at this as Linux or anything, I'm saying the days are really numbered for Microsoft if they don't, with the
Linux
stuff.
I'll tell you
stuff.
What, Sun is also pushing OpenOffice.org fairly hard.
They're giving that away.
That's entirely free.
Because it was OpenOffice.
And they're promoting it on, they're promoting it when you download the Java client. So whenever your Java client updates, you get a big ad for OpenOffice.org, which is interesting. So
isn't that foistware, as you used
to
call
them? No, they're not installing it. They're telling you it's there and advertising it. So
pop-ups.
But it's just an advertisement that appears on the installer.
Okay. The other interesting thing too this week, Mozilla, who are the people that bring us Firefox and all the open source goodies that we've been speaking of, or they're one of the providers, has released a prototype of a new application that aims to consolidate all their messages a user can receive over a computer into one reader package.
Oh, yes.
Is this new or what? Like, I would have thought most email clients could do something like this. Why is Mozilla any different? Dubbed Snowl, that's spelt S-N-O-W-L, the application intends to treat all messages as the same and lets the user get emails, RSS feeds, instant messaging, and even, heaven help them, Twitter messages and alerts from social networking sites in one reader.
So it's not just email, it's all the other things as well.
You can plug your Twitter in, you can plug in your
We had a bit of a play with some web-based versions of this a few shows back when we first started talking about Twitter.
Yeah, that tried to link all your various updates, all your status messages on Facebook and Twitter and all of those together. Yeah, so this is a kind of an extension of
this is a client you can use.
Hmm.
Do you know what a chumby is?
Not a clue.
Good. Well, you'll have to stick around and find out. That's after the break.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panelists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real-time with panellists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So, what's a chumby? Worked out what a chumby is yet?
No.
The guys in the forum are speculating about it at the moment. Chumby. Yeah. It's a little box that sits on your bedside table, or anywhere for that matter. Adam Turner is the proud owner of one of these said devices. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if he's listening to us on it right now, probably, but he's moving house, so he may not be. If he's got any broadband and he's got any telephony at all after what happened last week, and I haven't sent him any emails for a while, so that might still work, so... Anyway, Adam's view from a couch this week is all about the chumby, which on the surface I think sounds like a relatively nice little box. I wouldn't mind getting one, but anyway, each to everyone's thing, and have a listen and see what you think. But the chumby, wonder if it could be one of Tech Talk Radio's gadgets of the week coming up. But here's what Adam thinks, the chumby. MTV's Pimp My Ride features a team of rev heads converting a viewer's stock standard car into a customized beast on wheels. But if you gave these guys a boring old clock radio, you get back something like the Chumby. The Chumby is basically a tiny internet-enabled widget player. It's roughly the size of a tub of margarine tipped on its side. The Chumby features a 3.5-inch LCD touchscreen embedded in a plush beanbag-like casing. There's also a Wi-Fi adapter for connecting to your wireless network. You can program it via the Chumby website, configuring it to run a range of applications such as photo slideshows, internet radio stations, podcasts, news and weather reports, games, and RSS feeds. It runs on Linux and it's specifically designed to be customized, so an online community has grown up around Chumby modding. Chumbies cost $180 US, but unfortunately Chumby's makers only deliver within the US, so the widgets are very US centric. Obtaining a Chumby outside the US involves having a friend in the US order one for you and then post it to you. This sounds like a hassle, but of course the same restrictions applied to the first generation iPhone, and that didn't seem to stop around 50,000 of the suckers flooding into Australia. Anyway, along with playing widgets, the Chumby is also a highly flexible alarm clock that lets you create multiple alarms for different days of the week and customize the snooze time. You can set it to wake you up with a beep or else music from an internet radio station or an MP3 from an attached USB stick. Alarms can also be used to trigger different widgets at different times of day. Like many new technologies, the Chumby is a solution looking for the right problem. The two most practical applications for a Chumby are as a bedside alarm clock or a desktop photo frame. Other uses are limited by the small screen and the fact that it needs to stay plugged into the wall, although some Chumbies have been modified to run on batteries. The Chumby would seem to be the nerd's ultimate alarm clock. After waking you up, it can scroll the day's news and weather, along with family photos and even the day's events from your Google Calendar. We found the Wi-Fi link to be a little flaky when it comes to internet radio, which quickly becomes annoying. Another frustration is the small on-screen buttons, which can be hard to press, especially when you're stabbing at the snooze button at the crack of dawn. The latest firmware upgrade for the Chumby increased the size of the alarm buttons, but there's still a lot of work to be done here on the interface. Unfortunately, the Chumby's rather bright to have by the bed, even in night mode when the screen is set to black and the time is displayed in grey. This is the nature of LCD, because it has a constant backlight. Surprisingly, there's no way to completely disable the screen on the Chumby, so our solution has been to face it away from the bed at night, which kind of defeats the purpose. The other problem is that when the Chumby is displaying a widget, it's not displaying the time, so you still might want to retain your bedside clock. About now, you're wondering why you've spent $180 US on an alarm clock that's not much of a clock. Still, I really like the fact that it can tell me the weather in the morning, and it can tell me what I've got on today, and my kids love to sit on the bed and watch the photos scroll past where they call out the names of the people in them, so I reckon that I'm getting my value out of it. What the Chumby really needs is a separate LED screen just for displaying the time. Then you could shut down the LCD screen at night. Of course, all of this would be less of an issue if you were using the Chumby at work as the ultimate desktop bling, perhaps as an RSS reader or a YouTube viewer and a digital photo frame pulling down images from Flickr. Unfortunately, the Chumby doesn't feature an Ethernet port. It only supports WEP WPA and WPA2 PSK wireless networks. So you're out of luck if your workplace uses WPA or WPA2 enterprise wireless encryption, which a lot of workplaces would. You may find that you need to talk to the nerds in the IT department if you want to get a Chumby working on your desk. All up, the Chumby is an amazing device, but as toys go, it's not cheap. Ultimately, your opinion of it will depend on whether or not you find a good use for it.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And someone's asked on the forum, does the Chumby multitask? That's a very good question. Maybe, maybe not. You'll have to buy one and find out. Adam might pop up later and he'll be able to tell us all about those sort of things. So anyway, there's the Chumby, a lovely little $180 US dollar box you can have sitting on your bedside table if you choose to, or in your office or in a kitchen or wherever else it might want to go. Oh, it's very regal, isn't it?
What have we got happening here?
I think Dr. Ron's about to enter the room. He's currently in Ireland. We spoke to him earlier this evening. And he's taken some time out. Very graciously, we are here at the Tech Talk panel to hear that he's having a cup of coffee, sitting up there somewhere. He's not quite in England. He was there yesterday. So
oh,
it's
right.
wrong national anthem.
It's the wrong music. Yeah.
It was this or the Doctor Who theme, so I just happened to find this. Anyway, this is Australia calling Ireland. Come in, Dr. Ron, are you there?
Coming in base, over.
There he is. He's there. Dr. Ron, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. You remember us?
Thank you very much. Yes, I do remember you. As far as the music goes, well, I'm in the north of Ireland, so I suppose you get away with that a little bit more than you would if I was in the south, but that's okay anyhow.
So what are you doing? How's the holiday going? Have we caught you at a bad time? Or what's the weather like? 20 questions. Your turn now.
Do I ask the questions or do I give the answers? My first question is, what's up with JD and the Dell computer? I'll leave the country for a couple of weeks and the place sends the crap.
Don't worry. By the time you get back, it'll be gone.
Okay. Good to hear, JD. No, I'm actually, at the moment, I'm in Ballycastle, which is a small town up the northeast of Northern Ireland. So it's in... County. I'm looking at my map here. Hang on a minute.
This is
Google Maps not working.
The joys of being a tourist. Yeah, what's going on with the Google Maps? Hey, we've got Street View here now. Have you seen?
County Antrim. We're in County Antrim. I have. I had a look at Street View the other day. It's incredibly fast, and all the addresses I punched in, they all came up very well with photographs of the addresses. So that's very good.
Did they blur your house for you as you asked?
Yes, and my number plate's been blurred as well on the Audi and the Volvo at the front too, so that's good.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Now, tell me, how have you found technology in your trip so far? Has it all worked for you? Obviously, you're using your Australian mobile phone provider over there quite well. How's it? How's coverage? Better than expected? What's it like?
No, it's very good. The mobile phone's been working extremely well. I'm talking to you at the moment on my little iMate. And I've been using that for Wi-Fi as well as for mobile phone communications. And I'm roaming at the moment on O2 UK. That's the carrier that I'm roaming on. But in the major cities, like in Belfast last night and also in the major cities in England, I've had 3 coverage. And they're pretty good. They just charge a 25-cent flag ball for making calls and for receiving calls. But otherwise, the rates are the same as they are in Oz. So technology-wise, everything's been going well.
What about public Wi-Fi? Have you been able to get the thing to connect onto any Wi-Fi networks over there?
Yeah, I have, Graham, heaps. And a really good example was in Manchester, where there's just free Wi-Fi everywhere. Australia's really got a lot to learn.
So how has the rest of the technological journey been so far? Obviously, Wi-Fi is working for you. You're roaming really well. It just seems to work, obviously.
It does. TV's really good. Everyone's got dozens and dozens of TV channels here through BBC, and there's also ITV and other channels as well. The radio is terrific. Australia is just a technology backwater when it comes to digital stuff like television and radio. The driving around in the car, you can just hit the button for your traffic information every half hour. Your program is just briefly interrupted by traffic announcements with any congestion information or breakdown information on the whatever motorway you're on. So it works extremely well here, the digital radio. And that's not DAB either. I think that's what they call RDS, which is the traffic information services. But there's also DAB available as well, which is the fully digital high-def audio radio.
What's the price of petrol? I was curious to note in Ireland at the moment how the economic scale of things is going.
Yeah, it's about, at the moment, I'm driving a diesel car, which is it's a little Peugeot diesel. And it's going great guns. And the diesel's about, at the moment where we are here, I think I saw before in Ballycastle, it's about £1.30, which is probably about $2.60, $2.70 a litre in Australian language. But that's about the going price here. And you say to people that it's half that in Australia, and their jaw just hits the ground. And they go, what? How come it's so cheap over there? But, of course, we're just always moaning and groaning about how expensive it is at home, aren't we?
Have you got any internet access, or are you using it purely on the have you experienced friends, families, email connections, internet connections over there, or are you using it purely on your little portable device?
A bit of both. I've been using the portable device when I've been travelling in the motels, but staying with friends and family, they've had internet available in their houses, and it's very, very fast here. I was very impressed with the speed, especially serving sites from Australia. It's been great. So they're all pretty much exclusively using DSL, but it's a very fast DSL. It's not what certainly not what we're accustomed to. It's like really fast like cable broadband at home. We'll be going back to Bournemouth in at the bottom of England towards the end of the trip. We stayed in Bournemouth for a few nights with my wife's brother, and he's got a computer there, and he's got a little Wi-Fi router, which was great, that I hooked into, and he's got very fast internet access there. So I'll have a look at it and give you a proper report in a couple of weeks' time.
What's the cost of internet like over there? Have you had a bit of a look-see, or you just been touristy and using it?
Apart from it being free, it's really good. But if you have to pay for it, it's the same probably like it is anywhere in internet kiosks and motels, probably a pound or a couple of pounds for half an hour or an hour. Just depends on where you go. And you know, if you buy your lunch and your coffees at the same place at the same time, then it tends to subsidise your internet access. But pretty comparable.
We had a listener email us, I think, Brian. You've spoken to him, I think, via the show when you were this side of the planet before, in relation to the BBC and their licensing fees for television and the likes. 139 quid a year to subsidise the BBC. Have you spoken to anyone about that? Is there any grumbles about that, or do they think it's all money well worth spent?
No grumbles. Most people think it's money well spent, and from what I've seen, it's a very good service that the BBC provides. They've got all the television channels in addition to the radio channels. They've got news, which is just non-stop. It's like on BBC One, and they've got programming on the other channels as well. So, yeah, they're also another thing that to mention is that they're turning off analog, I think, sometime in the next 6 months or so. So there'll be no more analog. And I was getting questions from some of the family members over here. What do I need to do, Dr. Ron? Do I need to buy a box, or do I need to get a new TV? Because the pressure's on now. They're really starting to turn up the heat when it comes to switching off the analog signal. So that'll be interesting to see how that evolves over the next 6 months or so.
Is there much of a problem with that? Or if everyone just sort of, you know, taking it in their stride?
Everyone's just taking it in their stride. There's not much of a problem because most people have switched over already, like in the last few years. It's just the last of the technophobes, I guess, that are starting to hit the panic button.
Ah, yeah, there's plenty of those. There are people that like to find problems with those with anything, really.
Now, how many digital TV channels are there over there free to air?
I'll find out for you, Graeme. I'll let you know next time we speak.
Cool. And just briefly about the mobile phones, because we'll have to let you go, surely, Dr. Ron, because time is not with us at the moment. You're using third-generation technology. Is it fast with data and that? Have you given it a bit of a run for its money?
I haven't used any data. I am on 3G networks everywhere I go, but I've avoided the data just purely from the cost consideration, and I've just been using Wi-Fi where I've been able to on the PDA. So I haven't given that a go. At the moment, just using the phone for voice.
And that's been working okay. Just obviously, you rang me this evening, your number popped up, so it's really nice to know that it all works across the seas.
It does, yeah, it's really good. It just comes lights up with your name on the phone when you ring, and SMSs are working a treat. They're going backwards and forwards without any problems at all, so it's all very, very seamless. You just you know, hop off the plane, turn the phone on, and you've got coverage, off you go.
Fantastic.
Now, your mobile phone provider did a really good service with the international roaming. You've kept your number. It's not costing you a fortune to make calls while you're overseas, if I understand correctly from what you've said. But they didn't provide you with data roaming of any kind?
They probably have data roaming, Graeme. I've got to do some research on the cost. I'm just a bit wary about accidentally, attaching myself to a partner and roaming with a partner on a 2.5G network, in which case the cost is going to go through the roof. So that's what I'm concerned about there. I might hop on the net a bit later and have a look at some of the prices. But if I can safely guarantee that I'm going to be staying on 3 or whatever the 3 equivalent is over here, and I stay on a 3G network, and I'm not going to get hit with exorbitant data rates, and I could probably use it for data okay.
Hey, Dr. Ron, it's been an absolute pleasure, as per normal, having you join us there's a chair here just waiting for you when you come back, so it's been terrific. So thank you, and thank Lainey too for allowing you the time to come and play with us this evening.
All right, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on, and I'll give you another report next week, and looking forward to coming back and sharing all the stories and having a bit of a slide night at some point in time.
Oh, dear. Do we really want a slide note?
Digital slide note.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you can put those up on Facebook or Twitter or whatever
all
you
that,
do.
All that Grogs he's bringing back will help with a slide note.
That's a point, too. And a few Guinnesses, too. Have a Guinness for us, Dr. Ron. It'll be, several Guinnesses for us. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with the closing moments of the show after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a stand to give fingerprints.
Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilometers. Don't open things with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing like
it. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's Gadget of the Week is for those people who've got more things attached to their computers than they know where to put. It's a specially designed gaming table with space for no less than three 21-inch LCD monitors, your flight control yokes, your joysticks and pedals, and yep, everything attaches
to this
table.
What you need.
There's even room for a keyboard somewhere over there to the left.
And the computer itself somewhere?
Yeah, the computer itself must go somewhere. I can't see it in the photograph here, but yeah.
Bury him in the back these days, don't you?
Everything, joysticks, monitors.
A gaming table.
Yeah, flight control yoke. It's a gaming table. It comes from Digital Edge, and you can find it on their website. It goes in America for $379.
Gee, that's cheap.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get any of the actual hardware, any of the controls with it.
You just want a place to put your monitors.
It's a really fancy table that puts everything right where right at your fingertips where you need it. Yeah, it did. It's obviously specialised for those people that are heavily into game, more so than I am anyway.
So how much was it?
$379 US from Digital Edge.
Not bad. All right, there you go. If you've got want a gaming table, there's the one for you.
There's the one.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Well, we had to have Google's Maps this week for the Tech Talk Radio website of the week. If you haven't had a look at it, go and do it now. maps.google.com.au.
And the big feature to look for, of course, is the Australian street views that have just been added.
Well, that's right. So you go there, you put your little address, put your home address in there, in that little bar at the top there.
Yep.
Funnily enough, they know where you live. Now you can come down and have a look at your house from the satellite, but you'll notice there's a little button on the top right-hand corner says Street View. You click on Street View, it opens up a little black window in front of you, and lo and behold, theoretically, there should be your house, except if you live in some parts of Camberwell and other parts of Melbourne, and there's I think a few other places around the countryside where it's not seen.
Depends a bit on where you live, but anywhere, if you're looking at Google Maps, anywhere where the streets have got little blue lines down the side, that's where the
streets
street view
have no name.
That's where the street view camera has been. maps.google.com.au.
Yeah, so go and have a look now. It's very entertaining. Go and spy on your neighbours.
There is a fine line between genius and madness. Showtime.
Missed it by that much. I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, everybody's getting in on it these days. Another person putting their life up for sale on eBay is what I'm
Not
talking
another
about.
One.
Absolutely. This time it's an English lord.
Oh.
Dr. Ron could go and visit him, do an interview while he's over there. What do you think?
Good.
An eccentric British millionaire has put his life up for sale on the internet, including his title of the Lord of the Manor of Worley, in the hope of converting his assets into cash. That's what you need, a cash-strapped lord.
Yeah, well, there's probably a few of them about these days.
Are there? Why? What makes you say that?
You get to pay money to take over his mortgage.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I don't know. That's a
something like that.
You can come and pay money to take over my mortgage if you like. I'm more than happy for that.
I'll be able to do a swap with him.
Absolutely. David Piper, a hotelier who made headlines 6 years ago after advertising for a wife to become his lady of the manor, wants to sell his West of England existence on auction site eBay and move to London to be closer to his children. Why not? He's selling two hotels, two Bentleys, a collection of paintings, and his title of the Lord of the Manor, which he bought along with a large estate for £1 million. You're all speechless, aren't you?
Mm.
Absolutely. That's what it
How
is.
Much would you expect to pay? $10,000, so you can do it in PayPal.
I don't know. More than 100 bids have been received so far, with the current offer standing at around £1.3 million. Bidding closes on August the 11th, which is today. Right. Quick, get in.
Hurry
quick,
up. Yep.
Go. Go, run, bid. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron from Remote in the studio this evening has been Graham Callaghan, Justin Dunlop, and myself, Andrew McCommon. And join us next week. We will do similar things all over again. So that's been Tech Talk. Thanks for listening to us in your iPod, wherever you are in the radio, driving around in the city. You never know. All right, until next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.